Welcome back to another episode of Generations of Hunt podcast. This is your host, Joe. How is it going? It's going beautiful here in Michigan. We got 30-degree weather with snow and rain. Indoor archery season is about to come to an end, so outdoor season is coming fastly approaching. If you don't do indoor and going to start to do outdoors, right now is the time to get your bows out and start getting them tuned up. Tack is a couple months away, so if you're gonna go to that, that'd be like the perfect time to start getting that ready and then hit some 3D courses, prepare yourself for that. But other news is turkey season's right around the corner. I think we're gonna have some turkey episodes here real quick. Let us know what you guys want, what do you want to hear, like tactics and all that, and we can try to break it down for you. You know me, I'm not the best turkey guy, but I do like chasing them. They're fun to do in the off season, if you want to say there's off season. But back to the episode, we have Tim from Droptine Drone Service. Tim kind of breaks it down, like what he's doing with the drone, the services he offers. Unfortunately, right now with the legal aspect, it's not totally legal in Michigan for the deer service part, the deer recovery, but he can still do survey maps and all that and pet recovery. So if you have them options come up, you can still use him in Michigan for that. You know, we try to break it down like where he's going to be at in the Ohio, Indiana region this fall. So if you're down in Indiana or Ohio and you have this, you shoot a buck of a lifetime, give Tim a call. He'll definitely help you out. And then, you know, on the ethics part of it, we've been getting some, you know, mixed feelings on it. It's, you know, people are calling it the live scope of the fishing world and the deer world. But, you know, Tim says it here, like, the beautifulest way. Like, he's not going to come out 2 weeks, week, couple days before season or during season. He's not going to have you come out here and go fly the drone up. Okay, this deer is over here in this fucking acre a lot. He's not going to do that. He's got his ethics and morals. He's going to stick with them. And I think that's great because that's what it needs to be. Because, like, there's a certain point where if that was, you could just do that, the aid of a harvest of a deer instead of a recovery of the deer. That's when, like, you're just making hunting such a more rich man sport. And that's not where I personally want to go. And I don't think a lot of people would go, because you can just go, these guys can just get these $20,000, $30,000 drones and go fly them up, find their buck, and then maybe get them that way with a rifle or, you know, still with a bow. It'd still be tough to be, okay, I know he's bedded right here, I'm going to try to go put a stalk on this deer. It's still a living animal, not in a cage. Like, anything can happen. You're going into his bedroom. I'm not saying that, but it definitely could put a competitive edge on you. But, like, and I was talking to somebody about it. They're like, well, it's not realistic. They're $20,000. Not everybody's going to do that. Well, you remember when flat screen TVs were like $1,500 for like a 50-inch TV? You can get a 65-inch for like $300 at Walmart. So eventually they're going to be able to mass produce these drones, maybe with the thermal, and maybe cut the price even to $5,000. Man, I almost have that in my camera. So, I mean, it's not, I just don't want it to become a rich man's sport, but I love the service that Tim offers. Hopefully Michigan swings in the right direction of it. It's such a more ethical way of, you know, you just go and you hire Tim, and then he finds a deer. Even if it's on a neighbor property, you can go to your neighbor, and he's a big deer hunter, and he doesn't want you to booger up his woods looking for a deer that he maybe didn't kill. You know, how many times you hear that story? Like, I smoked him, and then it's a high shoulder or something, or back liver or something, and you're just boogering up his property. But you go, you get Tim over there. He flies a drone. He sees the deer. It's dead or alive, or you can confirm it's dead. And then you can go to your neighbor and go, hey, it's right here. All I have to do is walk right over there, grab that deer and dead out of there, and I won't mess your least intrusive way on his property, or you can get confirmation like, wow, I did high shoulder hit that or something. That deer's not dead. It's still alive. It's going to make it. Boom. You know, still sucks, but you got that peace of mind that this deer is not suffering and all that. So other than that, I think everything on the upkeep, you know how, just definitely go check out Drop Time Drone Service on Instagram or his Facebook. He said he was going to be starting a Twitter, not Twitter, TikTok. So if he has one out, go follow that on TikTok. But definitely go follow him. Even though it's not in Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, he'll be down there. Definitely give him a call if you need him. Then if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube, I've been posting. I'm probably going to post this episode of, it was a video podcast I filmed in the studio. I guess you can call this a studio. And if you want to check out the video version of it, it's going to be there. TikTok, if you want to follow us on TikTok. And then go to the Apple review or Spotify. Leave us a couple star reviews, just twos. We don't want to be fives. Don't give us five stars. No, I'm joking. Please, you can give us the higher rating stars. It'll boost our algorithm. And so when people are looking for us, they can find us faster and all that. Or it'll recommend it to maybe new listeners and all that. So other than that, have a beautiful day. I love you guys.
This is the Generations to Hunt podcast, where the goal is to learn together and further the culture of hunting. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to the Generations Hunt podcast. Today it's Matt and Joe. Joe, how's everything going?
Great.
Yeah, dude, like the last like four podcasts, like we're going to practice that.
Okay.
All right.
I'm working on it. I'll put it in my agenda.
Today we have a special guest. We have Tim Ross from Drop Time Drone Services. Tim, kind of introduce yourself. Tell us how you got into hunting, and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of the drone services.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm Tim Ross, an owner and operator of Drop Time Drone Services out of Fenton, Michigan, offering, you know, deer recovery. We'll get into that a little bit later. Some lost pets, wildlife survey, those types of services. I've been a hunter all my life, you know, since I was 10, 11, 12 years old. Hunted mostly Michigan this last season. I got a chance to go down south, do a little hunting, so that was nice. Just kind of like the average hunter, you know, just enjoy my time in the woods, take the kids out there when I can. And then this year, a buddy of mine got a, I don't want to call it a cheap drone, but a smaller drone, and took some nice pictures, came over the house, and I thought it was really cool. The pictures were clear. So my wife ended up buying me one for my birthday. Obviously, the first thing I did was take it out in the woods and started, you know, looking at deer and some fox and coyotes and rabbits and just kind of playing with it. And then started seeing some stuff about the deer recovery, the more expensive drones, started looking and doing a lot of research on that, and then decided to pull the trigger and get the Big Daddy.
So this will be your first year actually out with the drone, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So to back up a little bit, you said you went down south hunting. Where'd you go hunting down south?
I was in Kentucky, at an outfitter in Kentucky. Okay. Spent a week down there. It was beautiful. Probably timed it wrong with the weather, but.
Did you go about the second, third week of October, like the 20th, somewhere in there?
I went, so their gun season, I think, starts November 10th. So I went like the 29th through the 7th-ish.
Okay.
So I think their gun season starts right at the prime time of the rut. So I think I just missed it. Plus it was like 75 degrees.
Yeah, I went down to Missouri with a couple buddies, and we went for bow season in October, and it was like 80 degrees.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we still seen some good deer. It's cool to always get out of the state of Michigan and see some different things. So now, is that your first time leaving the state of Michigan to hunt?
To hunt it was, yeah. I've traveled all over the country and different parts of the world, and, you know, I've been to Alaska, Wyoming, Montana. You know, my job, you know, I travel a lot. So I've been all over the place, Iowa, Kansas. Unfortunately, not to hunt, but I did spend some time, like, in the mornings or in the evenings when everyone's out going out to dinner, I took a spotting scope and sat out in a ridge in Kansas and sat there and watched the sunset and just, you know.
Just see some giants running around. Yeah, it's a different world out there.
Yeah, and I got some actually – I took the my first drone, I took it down there on my hunt, and it was kind of in the mountains, and there was a right on a river, so I got some of my pictures on Instagram. You'll see, like, it was beautiful. The trees were, you know, beautiful colors on the trees, and the water was blue. It was nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Joe, I'm just waiting.
What?
No. Normally you'll.
This is your show. I'm just hanging out.
So as far as the drone stuff, so this year you're getting into it, and we talked a little bit about it. Let's talk about Michigan. So I didn't know, I guess, some of the laws around Michigan and kind of your plans just regarding hunting, and then we'll get into kind of some of the other services.
Yeah, so I knew let's back up just a smidge. So the drone for deer recovery is, in my opinion, it's relatively new, period.
Yeah.
So I think if you look at the most seasoned people out there using a drone to recover deer, you know, maybe a year or two, max.
I would say this season is the first time I can recall ever seeing it or even thinking about it.
I mean, that's the first time I've seen it, and I think everybody knows who, like, blew up, and I think that's just, like, what spread it like wildfire, and, you know, and that's the first time I ever heard of it or thought about it, because I didn't even know drones had thermals or, like, civilian stuff.
Yeah, and you know, the smaller drone I have, I mean, like I said, it takes really clear pictures, nice videos, pretty easy to operate. And then you get into these higher end drones and the thermal capabilities and the mapping, and I was just kind of blown away. And the ability to fly it at night, I mean, it's...
How big is this drone?
If you open it up, it's about... the blades will touch, it'll cover up this whole table, maybe just a little bit inside of it with the blades out and the arms out and stuff. So
about 3 to 4 foot radius,
yeah,
a little less than 4 foot probably.
So when I first got the idea, I knew who was doing it. I talked to a lot of people. I knew that Michigan, and again, this is just my opinion, that Michigan was a little gray on it. I mean, everyone's seen videos of people doing it. But in my opinion, it was early on in the stage of the, using a drone for that. And I don't think the DNR had really thought of it. So I had to do a lot of research in Indiana, Ohio. I got crystal clear on the law. I've got, you know, notes from the lieutenant colonel of the DNR in Indiana. So I did all my research. Then when I got to Michigan, I called about 5 or 6 different COs just trying to get their take on it. And I got 5 or 6 different answers, some personal opinions, some professional, and some kind of in between. So I really didn't get a clear answer. So then about a week later, I had one that was pretty engaging in the conversation. He came back with a very definitive answer and his, you know, and their interpretation of the law. And then the other 4 or 5 called me back the same day, ironically, with the same answer. So they were having bigger conversations because I think just with the popularity of it, they were getting, they said they were getting hammered with phone calls in it about it. So that's kind of where we sit right this second. I have worked with, and I'm not into politics or the law, but I have been working with a state representative, probably similar to the process that the dog tracking guys had to go through about the language interpretation. I did talk to a couple attorneys, but they were just crazy expensive.
Just
to have a conversation, you're looking between $6,000 and $10,000 to get their, you know, interpretation of it. I'm like, well, I can make phone calls on my own. So working with them, just trying to get something in the legislature to clear up the language, because right now it's interpretation and it's their interpretation versus what I think is an ethical approach to recovering a deer.
Now, do you have to have any special licenses or anything like that to fly a drone of that size? or I guess anything like that. I mean, I think we've all had the little drones you can kind of buy at Walmart, but this is not that. This is quite of a high-tech piece of equipment. So, I mean, do you have any special licenses you got to have before you can ever do anything like that?
Yeah, to do it commercially, you have to, it's called a Part 107. It's an FAA required, they call it a pilot license. I think that discredits true airline pilots.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was
salt.
I had to go through a process to take the test, get FAA approved. So I had my license, but to do that, to be able to get compensated for the work, you have to have a Part 107 license.
Okay.
For that like test, was there a class or anything, or was it more of a just like a kind of show up thing?
Yeah, there's things all over YouTube and the internet. You can take classes. You can pay anywhere from $250 to $700 for a class, guaranteed to pass, blah blah blah.
Right.
There's lots of study material. I figured before I spent that kind of money, let me just study real hard, look at it, and then take the test.
Did you get your license before you got the drone?
No.
Oh. Commitment.
Yeah.
Confidence. I love it. I love it.
But, you know, it wasn't easy. It was a lot of just airspace and altitudes and a lot of – they have quite a few different variations of that test. But the one that I took, I was kind of surprised of how non-drone related, to the weather that you hear that the airline pilots use, you know, and I was just like, wow, it's really, I didn't think a lot of it was applicable, but.
So can you go fly a plane or no?
No. You don't want to fly a plane with me, no.
Just cross off drone service, yeah. Pilot.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, like, what else can you do with that license if it's not drone related? Is there like a little other things, like a little like?
It's specifically related. I think they call it. It's an unmanned aircraft. It's just the Part 107 is, I think, is what relates just specifically to drones.
Okay.
So you can take a Part, I don't know, 100, and it's for a sporting pilot, and Part whatever for air traffic control or.
Okay. Yeah,
not 100% sure.
Yeah. Is there any like regulations over like? I thought there was something like in national forests, like there's a difference between regular state, but
yeah, I think when it comes to national forests or national parks, you have to have special clearance to do that.
Like you need a license. Cause like the guys that like, I didn't know this either. Like to film, if you make money and you film in a national forest, you have to get a permit through that there. So
that sounds about right. I'm not an expert on that, and I have no intent of doing that, so I'm kind of
okay
letting that,
yeah.
Whatever it may be, I don't know, but I'm not going to do it.
All right.
So let's get it. I guess let's talk about the other services. So I think that this is a neat part. So in Michigan, you're kind of, well, you're not going to do deer hunting or, you know, drone recovery services now, but you offer a couple of varying services that we talked about a little bit before. So let's talk a little bit about kind of some of the things in Michigan, if someone wants to get a hold of you that they can call that you could come out and help them with.
Yeah. I think being, you know, an outdoorsman and a hunter, just like you guys are, you know, I've done quite a few, I call them wildlife surveys, deer analysis, it's kind of all the same concept where, you know, this one guy in particular, we went up and flew over his property and we were just looking at the deer that were on his property, the buck to doe ratio. And I was actually pretty impressed because he was looking at the time when we did it, how the wind direction, where the sun was facing and how the deer were bedded, you know, the bucks versus the does and how they're related to food, how it was related to cover, how it was related to other houses. This guy shot a lot of big deer. So I think he was, it just kind of shows what he puts into his hunting. But I was really impressed with like using that data or that knowledge to, you know, map out and know where the deer are and know why they're there. we've done quite a few lost pet searches. Just found a handful of cats the other day. we did a couple on the west side of the state. Ironically, it was to find a deer tracking dog. so we didn't find it with the drone, and these people were were great. But out there, it was very, you know, there's just land for miles. And they had covered a certain section of land. And let's say it's a 500 square acres. It was a big chunk of land. So we flew over that just to make sure it wasn't there. I mean, we saw deer, coyotes, possums, raccoons. I mean, it was full of wildlife. But then we just kind of started going to different sections, you know, like there's, I don't know if they're square miles or half miles, but we would just go to each different plot and fly over that. Well, we'd spend about 3.5 hours, which is a lot of, you can cover a lot of ground. And we didn't find it. But what we did do is through the process of illumination, they went out the next morning, I think it was like 6 hours later, to the one section that we didn't look at and went right to the dog first thing in the morning. So by the process of illuminating these big chunks of tracts of land, they were able to find their dog.
Yeah, and I don't know if you ever lost a dog, but yeah, finding a dog in the middle of a large wooded section is the equivalent to looking for a needle in a haystack. So to be able to just start crossing off, okay, he's not there, if you're ever looking for an animal, is a bit of a peace of mind because now you can kind of start narrowing down what you're looking for. So.
Yeah, and it was on a leash and it had gotten caught up in some tree roots, so it was kind of stuck there. I mean, if we would have flown over it, we definitely would have found it. When you look at the technology of the drone, it's amazing. I mean, you would see it instantly.
What all can this drone do? I mean, I guess I know we talked a little bit about thermal imaging. I mean, heck, the only drone I've ever had has been the little one, and it takes clear pictures, but I've never seen it do anything outside of that.
They're pretty amazing. They can do a lot more than what I know how to do. That's for darn sure. You know, with the thermal imaging, there's 10 to 12 different palettes, you know, whether it's like white hot, black hot, red hot, just different, you know, ways to pick up heat sources. It also has a searchlight on it, as well as a looks like a big megaphone. So when we've had times where we found pets where we go up in the air and we can, you know, actually talk to the dog, or we can direct people to that location. We can also, it has a range finder, and it'll also pin the exact GPS coordinates. So I can be 400 feet in the air, find the dog, put the crosshairs on it, and it'll tell me exactly the longitude and latitude of where that is.
You just type it in on Google Maps and go.
Yeah, you can just put it on any part of your phone and just walk right to it. And at night, we can hover the searchlight over that, and you can just walk to the light. And what was interesting, what I learned on that particular job was, I think the winds were like 30 to 35 miles an hour. It was windy, and I was a little nervous going there. It was about 2.5 hours away. But that drone was perfect in that wind. I was really surprised. Of course, my battery life wasn't that great, but with the searchlight on that, it's fixed to the drone. But the camera, the thermal camera and the wide angle camera are on a, like they call it a gimbal. And the drone can be flopping around like crazy. So you have a field of view camera and it's fixed to the drone. And when you look at that drone's bouncing all everywhere. But when you look at the thermal or the wide angle, it just stays steady. But the light was connected to the drone. So I had a difficult time once it got dark to put the searchlight down on different animals because the drone's just bouncing all over the place. And that was the next section they wanted to go to, but I just didn't, the light was useless for me.
Yeah.
I mean, other operators may be better at it, but I struggled because of this. The wind was just ridiculous.
Well, you know, maybe 5 years from now, you know, with all the experience, maybe it'll be a lot easier, but.
I mean, when you pick up like a thermal image of something, like how quick can you tell what that is? Like,
that all comes to just with experience and just flight time. You know, I get out and I fly it around my house 2 or 3 times a week, just looking through different color palettes, different angles. And you start to learn, like, you'll pick up squirrels and you'll know, like, that's a squirrel. There was out when we were looking for that dog, there was lots of rabbits. And you can tell by how they run. And then you can tell, like, a raccoon and a possum. So it really, once you learn what you're looking for, it's pretty easy to pick. I mean, we were looking at one guy's property and he was kind of pointing out on the screen, like all these, like, well, what's that? Or is this a deer? And like, I don't think so. So I'll zoom in and show him, like, nope, it's a different heat signature. I'm like, when you see a deer, you'll know it. And then sure enough, we found some deer, and like, they stick out, like, it's a, you know, you can check out my videos on YouTube or Instagram. They stick out real, they're pretty obvious.
Have you, you haven't, so I'm trying to just remember here. So you haven't tracked deer. How many lost pets do you think you found?
So the pets found, two.
How often do you get called for them?
It's been, I think that it's been pretty slow, which is fine. You know,
that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It is. And it's tough because I think, and I struggle with it because I have pets, I have dogs and cats, and I've lost cats to coyotes and lost them in the woods. And, but to not, I don't want to prey on vulnerability. I want to offer a service to help someone find their animal. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to watch my kids come running out of the woods crying when they find the cat dead. You know, I don't want other people to deal with that. So, but you know, not only finding them, I consider that the dog, the son, that was successful. I helped them eliminate ground, a lot of ground. I didn't find it, but they were very appreciative of the work that I did.
I would say that that was a success. I would agree. If I called you out and we didn't find it, but I was able to go to the one place you weren't able to look the day before and find it, that's successful to me.
Yeah, and I did another one. It's funny. There were two. They were 2 days. They were a day apart. I went out one night. I spent looking for that tracking dog for, I think I got home at 3 a.m. I got a phone call at 7 a.m. the next morning to go back out the same direction, 20 minutes away, to look for a puppy. No, it was a puppy the first night till 3. Then they called me out the next day. But we were looking for a 9-month-old puppy.
Ooh.
And they knew the direction that it went in because it went with their older dog. Sweet. And this was super windy again, 30 miles an hour. And we didn't find it. I was confident in the area that we covered that it wasn't there. But the neighbor, I say neighbor, or quarter mile away, found it the next morning hiding underneath his boat.
Now, can your drone probably can't see under that?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
But again, it's eliminated, you know, the southwest cone or, you know, of where they thought it went.
So now let's get into deer hunting. So we've eliminated kind of your Michigan. So what is your plan for this upcoming deer season with your drone and then your hunting season, and how are you going to make them work together?
So unfortunately this year I did lose my longtime hunting lease. The property is probably going to go up for sale. Maybe that's just a sign. So my plan this year will be to obviously look for deer in Ohio and Indiana and some of the other surrounding states. I'm going to strategically be in the Ohio, Indiana area. I have the luxury of, I guess, my 9-to-5 to work from anywhere. So I will be in that area. I have a 40-foot fifth wheel, you know, perfectly comfortable to go down there, probably hunt some state land, you know, strategically place myself in that area. So if I'm not getting calls to hunt some of the state land, but now that doesn't mean I'm not going to take calls to drive down there, you know, but I think looking at, you know, gun season, opening day, probably some of your busier times in the woods, the rut, opening weekend, the youth hunts, you know, I'll strategically place myself in that market.
Do you think it's going to be harder to advertise to hunters in those states because you don't live there? Or do you think that you've done a decent job getting your name out there? Or I guess, what is your kind of plan as far as that goes?
So I am working with some people to help me with that. I guess social media marketing probably isn't my area of expertise. Hopefully, you know, coming on podcasts like this will help expand my reach. But by the time it needs to be out there, I'll have it out there. Just joining different groups and reaching out to people to let them know the DNR, working with them, letting them know I'm in the area. So that's kind of my plan now, is really to unfortunately have a marketing company help me out with that.
And then hopefully Michigan gets their thing cleared up, and then you'll have the three states, because the popularity of dogs in Michigan, especially. I mean, I think before deer season, you'll have, I know of at least one group of people, and they'll have like 40, 50 dogs to come track in. A lot of times you'll call them and they'll be busy. Yep. So I imagine that this drone recovery is going to take off. And we talked a little bit, I guess for me, I like the drone idea. I think it's less intrusive on properties. If you've ever brought a dog out, well, I do think dogs are really effective. They burn up a property. I mean, they're just running around, and I'm not saying just aimlessly running around, but anytime you're adding foot traffic to your hunting property is generally not a good thing. And with the drone, I mean, you can, like you said, you can cover so much ground in a short amount of time, and you can stand in one place, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, not to take anything away from our fellow deer trackers that use dogs. I have a good friend of mine that owns a dog tracking or deer tracking company. I think there's pros and cons to a dog, and they can argue there's pros and cons to using a drone. You know, like you said, you know, that less invasive, the scent. You know, you can hunt your property the next day without, you know, track, you know, grid searching and this and that. But I think that, you know, there's pros and cons to both sides.
What do you think what are your expectations for recovery rate, and what do you consider to be a successful recovery with the drone?
So I don't think I would guess at the recovery rate at this point, but I am very confident that if you're deer is out there and we fly over it, we will find it, whether it's dead or alive.
Right.
That's the other huge thing I like about the drone is, like, you'll have confirmation, like, whether that deer is dead or alive, especially based on what you're saying with how clear it is and things like that. You'll be able to show the client, look, like, do you think that's a deer you shot? Now, I know you haven't done it, but do you think that you'll be able to actually see if the deer is hit to confirm that it's that deer?
Yeah, so there'll be a little bit of, we'll call it Q&A prior to just showing up and looking for your deer. I'd like to get an idea of what we're looking for, you know, where you think you hit it, what kind of shot it was, take a look at the arrow, kind of typical things even with a dog you would discuss. But I think that it helps me narrow down what I'm looking for too. You know, you're not, if the deer is just hasn't died yet and it's a fatal shot, but it's, you know, it's going to take a little bit longer. We're not pushing it. We're not bumping it. And we can, with a fair amount of confidence, we can be 350 feet in the air and I can zoom in and see a hole, and it's, you know, what it would be, a liver shot, you know, shoulder shot, guts, whatever it may be. I mean, the camera's fascinating. I'm at 400 feet in the air, and I'm picking up squirrels, and I can zoom in and tell you if it's a red or gray squirrel.
Wow. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, you know, like, with dogs, like, you're like, oh, look, this bed's fresh. Well, you probably just bumped them and all that. With the drone, you could go, okay, he's right here. He doesn't look good or whatever. He's still alive, but he doesn't look good. So we either can continue it later or just know when, okay, we found him, we got confirmation, we can hang out here, or we can just wait till tomorrow and just, you know, take the mystery away from it, or just keep on pushing it. That's the benefit of it. And then, like, I think the most benefit of it would be if it did go on the neighbor's property and it did die, and you just go, you got on your screen, you got video, you talk to the neighbors, because, you know, they hunt too or whatever, be like, hey, I shot this deer, it went over there, I have video, I got a drone guy, I have video, it's right here on your property. Can you come with me, or can I just go grab it or whatever? I mean, it's proof. I can send you a video or something right there then. So I think that's the best benefit of it. Cause somebody calls you, be like, hey, I got a dog and it stopped at your property. You go, well, fuck, man, he's gonna blow up my whole spot. Yeah. And I don't want to be a dick and say no.
Right.
Cause you owe the animal the most, well, in my eyes, you owe the animal everything. I mean, some neighbors don't think that, but.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned the beds. You can see warm beds, you know. Right. So when we're looking at some of the wildlife surveys, you'll pick up hot spots, and those are just beds. Right. They're not even deer there. So you can see, you know, an active bedding area or if they're actually deer.
So I get sidetracked a lot like a squirrel sometimes. The wildlife surveys, so what are those, what are they expecting out of you when you come out there to – I know obviously you're not going to be drawing like a map, but like when they ask you to come out and do a wildlife survey, are these just basic landowners or this is a, like the DNR or things like that?
No, it's well, my vision is not the DNR, but it's more with a landowner. Let's say you own a chunk of land and you just want to see what's out there without, you know, if you can walk out there, you're going to bump everything out. But to get, you know, to get up in the air, we can take pictures at different angles. We can take videos. We can do counts of deer. We can look at coyotes or turkeys. It picks up turkeys just like it picks up anything else. You can see where they're roosting. Videos, pictures, you know, we'll take one from each corner. We'll take one from high above, like a 360 view. If you want to look at like a food source and see where they're entering the field, you know, where the trails are heavier, different times of the year. I mean, it can do all of that.
So talk about like how effective do you think this will be in like early season when you have the canopy? Will it go kind of through the canopy or I mean?
Well, so one thing I was thinking of, the canopy is an issue. You'll pick up heat signatures, but you don't necessarily get the detail. We can move around the angles, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't owned my drone during the canopy season, but you can change your angles. The area I was looking at in the western side of the state was there's a lot of pines. So I consider that pretty similar.
Yeah.
So you just kind of have to change your angle and move that around, and that's kind of where all the practice comes in. Of you might pick up like a leg, but you have to move around to get the right angle to see what kind of animal it is. But to own a chunk of land, or let's say you're looking to buy a land or lease a land. I'm in the market for leasing land, you know, like we were talking about earlier, and you guys are too. And you say, hey, there's a 60-acre piece. I just want to, what's it look like? We can go up there, you know, get up in the air, look, see where the deer are bedding, look at the trails, especially right this time of year, you know, they're real easy to see. And just take a look at it and see what kind of animals are out there.
So yeah, see if it's worth your time to either purchase it or lease it or things like that.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool because, like, you know, obviously we all dream of owning land, and my wife and I have talked about it, and it's like, you know, I'm not going to buy land without being able to see it, but an aerial view of land gives you a very quick look at it, not to mention the video. You know, I can go back and look at it in a lot more detail as opposed to just me walking and, you know, just hoping I see what I see, you know, what I'm looking for.
Yeah, to add to that, there's a video on my Instagram that I did a small parcel, and there was nothing on it, nothing at all. But an eighth of a mile away, I stopped counting at 100 deer.
Jeez.
So you would have no idea that they were there
right.
on that small chunk of land. I mean, they weren't on that chunk of land, but just maybe an eighth of a mile away, there was over 100 of them.
Right, which is very much inside of a deer's range.
Yeah. So if you and yeah, then you now you start looking at the value of it. Now when you're it changes your view of that 15, 20 acre parcel where oh, there's not much out here. Well, you just go 300 yards this way and it's completely different.
Yeah.
So like with the thermal camera, can you pick up antler or is it kind of a...
So with the thermal, you can't pick up a hard antler because of the heat.
Right.
I believe it will pick them up in velvet a little bit, but it's finding the deer and then just switching it over to the zoom camera, and you can go in and you can basically roughly score your deer from 400 feet in the air.
Wow. I mean, that's...
And you, like you said, you can do this in daytime or nighttime.
Yes, I can.
What is the difference in nighttime? I mean, are there any concerns between doing it in daytime and nighttime, or?
I prefer to do it during the day. It's just you're not working in such a, like, I don't know, as a silo is the right word, like you're very tunnel visioned, I guess, at night. Because then you're flying over, finding the heat signature, turning on the shine, you know, the searchlight, looking at the deer, versus during the day, you can see the deer and just flip over to the camera and see it. But it's rated for gale force, winds, rain. Like I said, I've had it up in 35 mile an hour winds without too much. I mean, I was scared, but it operated just fine. But I mean, there's, you know, it's very versatile for, you know, night, day, rain, snow, wind. Yeah.
What are your expectations from a hunter? So like if you've ever, and I I equate it back to the dog, and only because that's the only thing I have to kind of compare it to. Like when you call the dog tracking guy, he's going to ask you all kinds of questions and things like that. And you kind of said, you know, I'm going to ask that, or, you know, but like one thing about the dog is they would prefer you to not ever walk in there or anything like that. Like what kind of expectations when you get a call are you looking for the hunter as far as information or steps they need to take to help you out?
Yeah, I think when it comes to that, it's probably going to be very similar to a certain extent, because we don't want to, if the deer's not dead, we don't want to keep pushing it further away. If I know, if we know that, like I said earlier, if we know that it's in a certain area, we're going to find it. So if they get to last blood, they think they're pushing it, or they lose blood yet, you know, my recommendation would be to step out, get a good idea of the direction that it went, where you think it might have went. That's not saying, you know, we've all seen them go this way and then turn and make, you know, turn around, go 180 degrees the other direction, but kind of the same expectations, you know, the less intrusive we can be, the better off and better success rate I would expect.
All right.
Yeah.
So now kind of talking about your time in Indiana, Ohio. So you're going to be down there droning some deer. I don't know if that's the correct verb.
Droning. Droning.
But,
that sounds very military and not in a good aspect.
But you're also, like, you know, you're not going to be sitting around all day. So you're going to be down there hunting. Right now you don't have any privates, so you're kind of looking into that public. So, you know, what are kind of your plans as far as going down there and hunting and trying to find some land down there?
So I think my, like I touched on earlier, I'll go head down there probably late in the spring and kind of probably do like a little bit of marketing push, as well as kind of scoping out some potential land opportunities. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm just a lot of targeted knocking on doors on where I think I need to be during the hunting season to be in that in the right area. And then if that doesn't work out, you know, I'll offer them free services for sure. For you know,
yeah, I was gonna say that's how you do it. Like, hey, is anybody hunting that? But oh, there is somebody hunting here. I offer this service right here.
You're
all right.
Up, you see how that works?
Yeah.
Real quick, right? And then you know, obviously, if that doesn't work out, I'll be looking at some public land, and you know, I'll be down there. So
yeah, okay.
Yeah, public land in Ohio, I can speak personally, but public land outside of Michigan is a lot different than public land in Michigan. So I would say I wouldn't be too afraid to go. It's not as much as Facebook says it's pressured. They don't know pressure until they've come
right.
And hunt Michigan.
Yeah. Come hunt the pumpkin patch with us, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the big thing on drones is how ethical they are. So when it comes to drones, I know, you know, you're not out there using it to hunt, but in the summer, I mean, ethically, do you think it's wrong to use it to help scout?
In the summer, no, I don't think it's ethically wrong. I think that you're just technology. It's evolving. It's changing the hunting industry. You know, cell cams, drones. You know, 2 days before opening season, am I going to go out there and help a guy? You know, locate it. I'm not going to take that call.
Yeah.
But you know, the wildlife surveys earlier in the year, you know, do I know what the exact cutoff? No, it won't be anything closer than 2 weeks or so. But I think that it's very ethical to use it in the recovery of an animal.
So yeah, I 100% agree. I this is a biased opinion, obviously. I've never used a drone. I'm just going off of what I see on videos and things like that. I do think the drone is going to be more effective than the dog. Ultimately, the dog is going off of scent, and there's a lot of things that impact scent. Whether human, you know, interaction, whether the deer is dead or not dead. With a drone, you can eliminate some of those, and not to mention the heat signatures, the ability to cover an insane amount of land, I think just gives the edge to the drone. But like cell cams, they have quickly stirred some conversation, right? Mm-hmm. As is the how ethical they are. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to even having a law like spotlighting deer, right? So that's a big thing in Michigan, right? A lot of people think it's 100% illegal when in fact it's not.
Right.
what is illegal is to spotlight deer after November, or from like November, the whole month of November, you can't spotlight deer, and then you're never allowed to have a weapon in your car. But if you ever went out spotlighting deer, like I remember as a kid, I went out spotlighting deer, man, it was great. You got to see some big deer and things like that, but people get kind of edgy about it. But like with drones, I mean, I could definitely see, you know, me going out the day before opening a bow or opening for a gun, like, I think that's crossing a bit of a line. Now, are those deer probably going to be in that same area? No, but it's going to give me a pretty good idea, you know, and it's going to give me a bit more of an unfair advantage than I think even a cell can. But I would say, you know, hey, up until September, you know, because, you know, second week of September, youth season starts, things like that. But, you know, making rules and laws to kind of limit that. And I mean, do you think that we should have those kind of laws, or do you think kind of the 2A guys kind of, we, you know, leave us to be kind of thing?
No, I think that there definitely should be very clear parameters and language about what you can and cannot do. Even, you know, as far as carrying a weapon, how long you can go after that deer if you locate it and it's dead. Other states have clear language on that. And it kind of goes to whatever can be used for good can be used for bad.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, my dad took a shining deer up north all the time over the summer when we go up to the cottage. And, yeah, it was great. But that can also be, heck, up north, half a mile away, probably someone probably shot $3 while we were out there shining. Like, yeah. You know, what you can use for good, you can use for bad. And I think that's – I think I'm a very ethical outdoorsman, and if I thought this was unethical, I absolutely wouldn't do it. But we're doing our best to recover an animal. Not that anything in nature necessarily goes to waste, but, you know, if we can recover that animal, I think we owe it to the animal in our sport to do everything we can to do that. So, yeah, could somebody go up and there's my deer, like we talked about earlier. But I think the DNR, my opinion, you know, the DNR thinks people are going to go up in the air and somehow drop a hand grenade on a buck, or they're going to say, there's a buck over here, and a hunter's going to walk out there and shoot it. Well, I've been in the woods a lot, and I don't think you're going to necessarily walk up to a deer.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if you can catch it in an open field and you got a rifle or a gun, like, yeah, I mean, it's not to sound condescending, but it's not difficult to stalk within 300 yards of a whitetail. I mean, it's not hard. Now, I could see that bow hunting. Honestly, I would stand back and pay people to watch your drone if you showed them where they were at to go stalk a deer, because I guarantee you 99% of the time, I bet you they don't get within 100 yards.
No. These are mature animals, and you're going into their back. I mean, their
house.
Their house and all that. I mean, you can't take the elements out of that. And I think, like, the biggest thing, like, well, they're going to use these thermals, you're going to take these drones and all that. Who is buying? I'm not buying $20,000 drone just go to get a deer. I mean, I personally can't afford that.
I can't talk a lot. I mean, I bought Sitka gear, so.
Yeah, it's about the same price. It's about the same price now.
No, I mean, I'm not. Yeah, I don't think a ton of people are going to think about purchasing a drone. And then I just don't believe that there's someone that is going to actively go out and try to use it specifically for deer are going to have the means to go out and poach a bunch of deer with their drone. So I guess I'm not concerned about it, but I do think that there are some ethical boundaries that it can cross if not used properly.
Yeah. And I back up a little bit. I always look at, I'm more of a bow hunter than I am a gun hunter. So everything I think about, it's more orientated towards bow hunting. So yeah, I'll video you while you're trying to sneak up on 160 inch buck. I'll sell it.
Yeah. So, but no, I don't know that you're gonna. And I say this now. I'm sure 10 years from now, maybe we'll have different technology. But I just think that the drone. We've all lost deer, right?
Yep.
And it's one of the worst feelings in the world. I'll use my past season. All right, I shot a deer with a gun. Didn't have much blood. And, man, like, we looked, and I didn't know the rules. We actually brought a cheaper drone out there, not one of them, you know, not anything what you've got, and we just couldn't locate it, right? a week later, someone else went out there hunting and they located it, and it had circled back around to the exact spot we were looking. And so it's like, man, yeah, if I had your drone call you out that day or the next day, I don't waste that deer, right? You know, right. It doesn't sit out there for a week. We find it that day, we go get it, and, you know, we all walk away happy. But instead, I have to tell a story about how I shot a pretty good buck and then didn't get to eat any of the meat because it sat out there for a week.
Yeah, and I don't like to see them suffer.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And you know, I've lost deer too, and man, it's a miserable feeling. We've all felt it.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's gut-wrenching. You don't sleep for a week. You're out there just crawling around your hands and knees looking for anything you possibly can, replaying that image over and over and over. Now imagine that feeling if someone said, for a fact, your deer is alive and it's going to live.
Yeah, it's way different.
Yeah.
It's a whole different atmosphere. I mean, even just like, you know, I've shot deer and then picked them up on trail camera a week later. Like, yeah, it sucks that deer had to go through that and everything, but there's some reassurance that it's still alive, it's still living, and it will hopefully survive. Same thing with a drone. Yeah, you're able to go up and say, look, man, like, you can go out and try to shoot it again, but I can see right here it looks like it's doing okay, or, hey, you need to go out there and put another arrow in it or bullet in it to try and
recover. After a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you can get that reassurance, be like, this deer looks like it's alive, and it's like it's just right there. So like, let's not pursue it anymore. Let's not push it anymore. Not being selfish, but like, stop blowing up your property, because like,
yeah,
that's what if I couldn't get a reassurance, I'm gonna go try and find them.
Yeah, I'll blow a property.
I'll sacrifice my land and my time in the woods. Like, I owe it to him. I mean, even if it's a doe, I don't care. I'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we're ultimately taking an animal's life. So we owe it to that animal to at least try and recover it. And at the end of the day, yeah, if you shoot a deer and you don't recover it and it dies, is it going to be used by the animals around? Yeah, but if it wasn't for you, that deer wouldn't be in that position.
I'd rather feed my family than the coyotes.
Yeah, you know, I'd much. Sure. Yeah, I'm not a huge proponent of coyotes.
And look at what we were talking about earlier. Your buddy shot a deer, and they looked for it and couldn't find it, and it was 75. You found it 3 months later, the deadhead 75 yards behind the stand.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's
you'd find that deer in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Well, and then just this year, I mean, so where we found my deer, my wife and I actually had walked in that spot, and it wasn't there. So when they called me a week later and they're like, oh, yeah, it's right here. And I walk out there and I see it and it's on its back. You can see its belly from 60 yards. I mean, literally, I pointed to the guy like where there was some blood on the ground where I shot it. And I was like, how the heck did that deer get back there? If I have a drone that, you know, if I have you, I can call you and you would have said, well, this is how that deer got back there. Or you guys are just blind and absolutely walked right by it six times.
And,
you know?
Hey. I've done it.
Oh, yeah.
I found a deer 2 weeks after I shot it, sitting in my other stand, looked over and 70 yards away. I'm like, what's that? Sure enough, it was a buck I shot 2 weeks before.
Yeah. I think, like, I would love to talk. I mean, probably deer trackers aren't that great, but like a deer tracker and their success for a year, and then you know, after a year. I mean, this year I imagine you're probably not going to screen a ton of calls because you're trying to get your name out there. But heck, man, I'd almost put, without ever seeing, I'd almost put a drone against a dog tracker with experience who does screen calls just to see what the success rate is. I think it's going to be a lot higher than.
So what's a success to you?
So your ability to tell me like whether my deer is dead or alive.
Right. Yeah.
Like if I call you, you know, if I call you and I pay you this amount of money, can you go up in the air, tell me that's my deer and it's dead or it's alive? If you can, you know, and I'll use my experience with the dog, right? The first dog I brought out, we seen the deer alive. So in my mind, that was a success. The dog can only take me, you know, it's like leading a horse to water, right? He can only take me to the deer. Ultimately, we didn't recover that deer, but it was the next day we kicked it back up and it was still alive. So what the dog did its job. It got me to the deer.
Sure.
So with the drone, yeah, like if I ask you to come out and you find my deer and we can confirm that's my deer, like I don't see how a dog is going to be able to compare to that with the technology that you have. I think the average drone that you can get at, you know, Walmart or even the higher end ones for $500-$600, yeah, I think they'll be able to compare to that. But I think with the technology that you have and other drone services I've seen with the heat signatures, the, you know, night vision, things like that, I have a hard time believing a dog's going to be able to compete with that.
Yeah, and, you know, I have a – my other – so I have a DJI Mini Pro 3 is the other drone that I have. And when you look at what they're capable of side-by-side to the – my big drone's a DJI M30T with the thermal imaging and stuff. If you were to go up during the day and just same altitude and look around – you're going to see the same thing, but the second you switch it to infrared, it's like it's a different world. It's like looking underwater. It's so just having that feature alone, you know, you could fly over an area, a deer that you shot or any deer that's just bedded, and you have a hard time seeing it. I mean, you're going to be zoomed in and slow where that will just pick it up in an instant.
Yeah, that's just where I just don't see a dog being able to compete.
Yeah, and I think – and the examples that you're given, I would agree with you. I mean, I don't want to take away anything from our fellow dog deer
practitioners. I think that the service they offer is fantastic.
It's an art, an art.
So to be able to train a dog to do that and do things, and do I expect people to go out and buy a bunch of drones with the technology that you have to pop up? No. I think that we'll still have dogs. I just think the technology of the drones is something the dog won't be able to compete with. I mean,
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I've dealt with an experienced dog and I've dealt with maybe what I think is an experienced dog with an inexperienced handler, but it was two drastically different, experiences. Mm-hmm. Because the first dog, the dude came out and I mean, it appeared to me that his dog knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. He had control over the dog, things like that. The second one, which we talked about on the Kansas episode, it was not fun for me, was not fun for Mike, and it wasn't fun for the tracker. The only people who had fun were the two dogs who just got to run around, you know. So, yeah, with you, I just got to hope that you don't crash your drone and we all sit there and cry as your drone is sitting in
We'll be crying for different reasons. But.
Yeah.
I mean, and people, like, everybody admits technology is just advancing. So, like, you have to, like, when everybody has to agree, even the dog tractor's got to agree that this is way more. I mean, they used to leech people, you know what I mean? And then now we have penicillin, like,
yeah,
you gotta admit, what are you gonna do now? Just because it worked in 1800s, yeah, are you gonna put leeches on you, or are you just gonna go get amoxicillin?
Right,
you're gonna go, well, this is obviously works way better and more efficiently. I mean, but I mean, you can't deny it. I mean, like, as simply, it's I think it's way more ethical and way more less intrusive and all that than the dog. And like I said, we're not taking away the art form. It's still a beautiful thing to watch these dogs work. But, I mean, for if I was going to put my money on two different things, I'm putting it on the drone every time. 99% of the time, I'm putting it on. Even if that dog has 1,000 recoveries, and I got Tim right here, and he doesn't even have one recovery yet. Not dissing you, Tim. But I'm still putting my money on you.
Yeah.
I'm still putting it because I know what the capability of that machine.
And I agree with you, but I think there's a world where we can all live together.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
For sure.
But, yeah, I tend to agree with you, for sure.
I'll say it because okay. They can be mad at me. They can be mad at me because I'll say it all day because, I mean, you just, like, sometimes you just can't deny technology. And
I think that being early in it and in the Michigan for Michigan, and I think there's a couple other people I've caught wind of that are dabbling in it, that to be on the forefront. So if there ever becomes law that changes, to have that experience, and let's face it, the guys that got in early on the dogs, you know,
yeah,
there was only a couple of them. Now there's
thousands,
tons of them.
Yeah.
Do I think drones will get that way eventually? Yeah, I do. You can see it in other states. I've been kind of following that, and yeah, it's growing. But I think there's enough opportunity out there for all of us to live happily.
So, like, I don't want to blow up. I don't know if your wife is going to listen to this or anything about about the price of this. Like, what's a general range for one of your drones that you have? I mean, don't have to give a specific. It's like just with one battery, and then, I mean, what?
So the drone was the drone and the remote were $15,000.
That's a lot of deer.
That gets you about 25 minutes of flight time.
Oh my God.
So I had to buy three extra sets of batteries. A battery, and it runs on two. A battery is $349. The spotlight and the searchlight and the broadcasting system was another $1,500. So yeah, and then the case, you know, comes with a case, and the charging station looks like you're going to launch ships into space. It's crazy. But yeah, I'm probably just under, just for the unit itself and the batteries and stuff, I'm probably just a smidge under 20.
So it sounds like two drawbacks to the drone. Obviously the price, right? That price tag is not going to be for everyone. But the other one is you said you only had 25 minutes of battery. So you're... Your time in the air definitely it can be a hindrance if it's especially early season. You got to move around with that canopy.
So that's actually a good question or point. So these drones are capable of what they call a hot swap. There's two batteries. I can bring that drone down, land it, take one battery out, put it in, swap the other battery out. As long as there's one battery in there, it won't lose its coordinates. It won't lose the view and take off. That process takes like 10 seconds. That's why I need multiple batteries. So when you talk about the flight time, I mean, they advertise 30 minutes, 45 minutes, or 42 minutes, something like that. I don't fly it to 0% because at 0%,
it falls out of the sky.
Yeah.
And that's probably like...
There's safety features that you can say at 20%, it automatically returns to home, and it will land on this table.
And that's like kind of like when cars, like, they're in like, when they say like 20 miles to gallon. Well, that's probably like wind at their back when they're doing this test and all this. Like, it's a control, almost a controlled situation to be in their favor with the time and all that.
Yeah, so when I went out on the windy day to look for those dogs, I have a generator and the charging system with me. So the second I swap out that first set, I plug it into the generator in the truck, and it's charging so I can cycle through those. So yeah, that 3.5 hours, I went through 2.5 cycles of batteries.
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to be negative, but I mean, just because we're just kind of comparing to the dogs. But another drawback is the amount of things that you have to bring with you, right? I mean, if you compare to a dog, you know, I just got to bring a dog, maybe some treats and some pets. You know, with the drone, like, you got to have some space in your vehicle. You're not driving a, you know, Kia Sport or whatever to bring this stuff out there. You got to have a truck or a trailer, something that you can put the generator, the batteries. And the drone itself is big. I mean, the table, I know we don't.
Well, it folds up nice.
Folds up.
So picture like a roller bag for like a for luggage. It's about
a carry-on bag.
Yeah, it's about 14, 15 inches wide, 2 foot tall, and a foot deep. It's got wheels on it, and everything folds up and collapses in there. The charging station's about half of that. You have to have a light, a landing pad, and the generator. You know, I mean, yeah, there's...
Could you work out of, a small hatchback, like SUV, you think?
Yeah, and if things get busy, I'm going to have to switch to that, because I drive a quad cab one-ton diesel. So
I'm going to guess that once it gets out there, you're going to be busy. I can tell you, if it gets cleared in Michigan, like the verbiage gets cleared, that's one other thing, though, I guess. So what are you going to do if that happens and you blow up? Because now you have to pick. Am I going to go find a deer, or am I going to go deer hunting? Do you think at that point you kind of screen a little bit more, or hope that some more drone buddies come out, like the dogs, and you can send them out?
So I would have to say I'll have to worry about that when it happens.
Yeah.
That'll be a good problem to have to worry about. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely passionate about hunting. I'm passionate about, you know, the drones and finding the deer and the wildlife. I think it's, even just in my own land, it's just fun. It's cool to go do it. I was out flying around the other day, just find, there was a coyote 100 yards behind my house, curled up in a ball. I'm like, brought the kids over. I'm like, look at this. He's just right over there.
That would be super cool.
It was just cool to see, you know?
Yeah.
So you can answer this one if you want, or you can wait. What is the, do you have a price range as far as what you're going to charge right now for people to come out or to call you out, or what kind of determines that for you?
Let's do the pet recovery, and then we'll do the aerial service first, and then we'll do like the deer recovery. So like,
yeah, if you were to, so I kind of just look at where pet recovery, where they're at. I think within an hour, you're going to probably be $150. And I will make every attempt possible to find your pet. And then as you step over that hour drive, it'll be $250. And then step into 3 hours, it's going to be $300. That's kind of where I'm thinking right now.
Yeah, that's really reasonable.
That's reasonable.
And the people that, and I won't name names, but the people that have used me for the pet, lost pet search have paid more than that on their own.
Yeah.
Offered that's, more.
I can tell you, if I called you to come get my dog and it was $150 and you found my dog, yeah, I'd be you'd be getting tipped nicely just because of the relief of getting the dog back, not having to explain to the kids, you know, not having to be sad. Yeah, that's a big one there.
So that's kind of where I base it. I mean, obviously there's going to be, you know, some different factors that come into play, but that overall, it's kind of how I base it. You know, it's time, but I definitely don't want to prey on their vulnerability either. Right. You know, it's, I know what it's like.
Yeah.
If it's closer than, you know,
and I just went to Staples to get copies and stuff. And like for a copy, like, you know, people put up like missing poster signs. A copy was like $1.90 now. Like for 150, you couldn't even get like 100 copies if you go to the Staples. Yeah. So like, and the drones, it'd be way better than,
yeah.
Oh, Snickers is lost. Call this number. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's. I haven't done it in a like an urban area. You know, I don't know if I would.
Yeah, that's.
It's just there's too much. I don't think I would be very successful.
You'd probably find a bunch of strays.
I'd find everything. Every, you know, like.
It would be
this is probably where we are now. It's probably, I don't know if I would do it.
Yeah.
Unless it was, went, you know, in the field across the street. That's different. But in a subdivision or, you know, in the city, I would.
But, you know, the problem around here is a lot of missing pets is the coyotes getting them.
Yeah.
You know, hopping over the chain link fence. And poor Snickers is.
I enjoy that you came up with Snickers, by the way.
Yeah, that's twice he said. Snickers. Hey, if I can find a warm leg. Oh, my God.
Well, I found Snickers.
Right.
That would almost be
Snickers.
Worse.
Snickers. Why did you say multiple? Well, that's how many pieces he's in.
That would almost be worse. Calling you out there and you just find a leg.
Would you lie and be like, I didn't find it?
I don't know. Like, that's pretty funny. Like, yep, I don't know where he is, guys. You know what? This one's on the house. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, wow. Yeah, that would be a hard one.
Yeah, yeah. It would be tough. Like, kid trying to look at the camera, but like, no. So.
That's terrible.
No, but we got
it. But it's, hey. It happened to my cat.
I mean,
so, a quick story on that is we had cats and they go out at night. And they'd come back in the morning. We live on the woods. Sure enough, the cats are gone. They didn't come back. And me and my wife were like, you know what happened? Because we were coyotes and fox. They're everywhere. And the kid's like, we want to go look for the cats. And I'm like, no. I'm cutting the grass. And I'm like, no. And it kept bugging my wife, my poor wife. She's like, we can go look. And I'm like, what are you going to do if you find it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure as crap. I'm sitting there. Cutting the grass, and I look up and I see my daughter running down the ridge, just bawling her eyes out. Yeah, they found it. Oh. I'm like,
yeah, yeah. That's exactly how I would imagine that would go.
Yeah, it wasn't fun.
So, what's like an aerial service? I mean, I understand there's like different aspects and all that and stuff. Though.
Yeah, it depends on like the size of the land and how much you want to go out. I mean, you're probably looking at probably a minimum of $250. And then it kind of depends on some variables, how far away, how much land it is. But, you know, again, I'm thinking in this mid-Michigan market, you know, probably starting at that point.
So with that, you're like, Are you editing a video and putting it together for them and then sending it to them, or?
Yeah, it depends on what they're looking for, but yeah, it would be, you know, there's probably going to be some just like B-roll or whatever you want to call it in there, but I will do my best to kind of create a package to what they wanted. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, as a hunter, you just want to see where the deer are, what they're doing. It's not, you know, I'm not going to have fancy music playing in the background and rolling credits.
Yeah.
We can take a picture during the video. We can put the, you know, the coordinates of where they are, and, you know, we can put little markers on an aerial view of where they are so you can see the density of where the deer
are. So when you're doing this, could I be like looking over your shoulder and you'd be just showing me all of that?
And some people, most of the people, that's all they wanted to do.
Oh,
just watch you.
Just walk.
How big is the screen on your controller?
It is, it's pretty big, 8-9 inches, if not bigger. It's
about the size of the laptop, or a little bit smaller.
A little bit smaller than that.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's good size.
Do you have an HDMI on that? Could you display it to a TV?
Yeah, I could. There's 5 or 6 different outputs on it. So yeah.
I think I seen the one guy. He does that on like the side of his van.
And there's no denying that he's the leader in this, and he's all credit to him. That's where I got my idea. I mean, he does a fantastic job.
I think he's a great guy, and
I just don't have the resources that he does. Yeah, he's earned it. I mean, hey,
you got to get a TikTok is what you got to do. Yeah. Just don't show any of the dead deer.
Yeah,
learn that the hard way.
We're still on account warning on TikTok, but I swear, like, you see more boobs and butt on that thing than anything.
Oh yeah.
But I showed him a video of like, dude, the straight animal is getting pulverized, and 10,000 likes. I'm like, my video don't even get 100 likes, and then it gets taken down immediately. I'm like, what in the heck? I don't know what we pissed somebody off at TikTok.
Yeah. I'm not on that platform yet, but I think that's next.
It's like it's such a great marketing tool, because like I made the stupidest video,
dude. And those are the ones that always just
blow up, and like I spent like 10-20 minutes editing one, and it gets like 1,000 likes or 1,000 views on
the me. One thing that you're gonna probably dislike about TikTok, at least this is the rabbit hole I went down, is when you're sitting there waiting for someone to call to recover a deer, you're gonna realize 2 hours has passed and you watched the dumbest videos in your life.
Well, I do have a personal TikTok, so yeah, I sit there. Yeah, I'm on that. It's crack.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
for Drop Time Drone, I don't have a TikTok for that yet. But I spend enough time goofing around with the other social media platforms, and
Instagram is my favorite by far. Instagram's the best.
I suck at Instagram.
Yeah, you need to work on that. But it's like it's how I get the most leads. I guess if you want to say like guest and all that, and just like just communicating with the followers and all that, and just putting out videos and all that, it's just the best. I mean,
it's been easier for me on Instagram than it has like Facebook. Yeah, that has been.
Yeah, our Facebook page is not much activity. I mean, I get a thing and it gets a lot more views than it does like followers. But like our Instagram page, he texted me one day and he's like, we need to do something for like 1,000 followers or something like that. And I was like, I got on Facebook. I was like, dude, we have like 64. And he was like, no, on Instagram. And I went over there and I was like, oh, like this is way different. And I think it's just the way you interact between the two platforms is why we got more attention on Instagram.
I just think people like personally are just like striving away from MySpace. Facebook is just because it's like it's almost like too family oriented, or it's just too meme-y, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What was it?
Meme-y. Like
it's meme.
Is that something Snickers like?
Yeah. Well, it's meme, and then it's e, like something's cream is creamy. Creamy.
No.
Meme-y.
No, it's.
I know it's meme.
It's meme.
It's meme-y. Like,
no, please don't say that.
No. I'm not saying me. I'm saying me with Y.
Like too much meme.
Yeah, there's too much meme.
I'm physically about to have an aneurysm. I don't know what you just said.
Okay, so on deer recovery, what's like the cost of like, what are you thinking? I mean, I know it's all about geographically located and all that. I mean, just saying we're going to base it, we're going to be in Indiana and or whatever in Ohio right now. So let's just say, what's the cost of that?
Yeah, and where I'm located now, I'm not going to burden my clients with, you know, that's my issue, not theirs. So, right. You know, other people to travel from where they live in Ohio to Michigan, you're going to spend over $1,000. And I know that for a fact. I'm not going to do that to work in Ohio and Indiana. I got into this knowing that I'm going to have to do that. To give you a specific number, I'm not going to do that yet because I want to wait and kind of see what the market does.
Okay.
Just, I want to make sure I'm competitive. Okay. And I want to make sure that there's value to what I do and I can be competitive in that market. So I will wait. But it's probably going to be around $300 all in.
So if they are Buckeye fans, it is double the price, correct?
I don't know if I'd answer the phone. That's one of the screen questions.
No. Yeah. Where did you shoot it, and who do you root for?
I love all my Buckeye friends down there in the South. Yeah. Don't be scared to call because you're a Buckeye fan.
No, I'm just a big Michigan fan, so I like to throw some digs in there whenever I can.
Yeah.
But even at, you know, $300, it's not bad. I mean, you're talking a decade, I would say close
roughly
to a decade.
$300.
Yeah,
roughly.
Yeah.
There's a give or take. Yeah. Give or take just, 500.
Just going off, off of that number, it's, you know, that's not bad. I know some people are going to be like, you know, wow. But I'll just use my experience with the dog. It was probably a decade or so ago when I used the first dog, and it was $100 for him to come out and $25 if we recovered the deer. But remember, that was a decade ago. 2 years ago when I used a dog in Kansas, it was $400. And that's a dog. I'm guessing, I can tell you right now, if I called you up and was like, hey, I need you to come out and locate a deer for me that I shot, and you told me $300, that would be not an issue at all.
No, and it's, so I say to be competitive, I'm not doing it. What I mean by that is I'm not looking to undercut anybody out there doing that. There are people that advertise even less than what I'm thinking, but I just want to see what the market will bear as far as that's concerned to make sure that it's a reasonable rate. But I do know that my rate will be fixed. It won't be plus plus. It'll be, so there may be some benefits to that and there may be some disadvantages of that, but it'll be fixed. So when you call me, you know exactly, you're going to pay me up front, but you're going to know exactly what the price is.
Yeah, I would recommend that. I mean, I don't own a business, but I can tell you based on stories I've heard, next thing you know, you find their deer and they're like, oh, by the way, I forgot my wallet.
Yeah, and we'll be set up to take, you know, we're set up to take payments, you know, mobile, you know, Venmo, credit card, cash.
Cash is king.
Because I will tell you, like, when I was in Kansas, the guy only took cash, right? Well, that's good. You know, I had my, you know, money, I don't generally carry cash. So trying to find,
I'm married too.
Yeah. Trying to find an ATM that wasn't then going to charge me in order to pull all this money, like, it was kind of difficult. So to be able to take card, Venmo, PayPal, you know, things are, that's pretty big. I mean, that's nice.
And let's face it, you're just crawling out of your tree stand. Yeah. You haven't gone home yet.
Right.
Yeah. You need me to come out. Yeah, it's beneficial to me to offer as many options as possible.
Yeah.
Plus, with that, I mean, you know, I can literally have you paid before you show up. I mean, I know some people wait till you get there, but I mean, I'd like to have faith that you're going to show up. If you don't, then, I mean, you know, it doesn't.
If that happens once, I will never work again. You know what I mean? It would happen.
Yeah, I mean, you just,
I wouldn't do that. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, and like you said, Dick, you're getting on the stand. If I'm in Ohio, last thing I would be like, hey, you gotta find cash. I'm like, fuck, I don't have this much money on me. And I'm like 2 hours from a town or something or a gas station. Like
cash that. Check or your bow, whatever.
Yeah.
Fuck, I'm taking cash, man.
No, anything we can do to make it easier, we I understand that, you know. So yeah, we make it as many easy options as we possibly can.
Yeah. No, I just thought of this real quick. This has nothing to do with payments, so I'm sorry we're going down this rabbit hole. But it goes back to the benefit of the drone. So I actually, not to kind of shit on the dogs more, but my buddy, he was out in Iowa, and he hit a deer, and he was calling dogs. And the issue he ran into was they were out tracking other deer, so they couldn't get to him, right? So you offer a service, you know, that if a dog can't get to him, you know, you're going to be available. You can get to them, hopefully. You know?
Right.
So it's just one more service that's going to be available to kind of maybe help dogs, right? Because these dog trackers are getting hammered. And so maybe you take, if you took 100 tracks off of them a year, I imagine would be a lot. And for them, it's not really going to take into their money because there's 100 people waiting for them to just track deer. So,
yeah, and I think there's a give and take with that because, you know, obviously the guy out there that's leading the charge, he's extremely busy. And I'm sure there's been plenty of times where they couldn't get a hold of him. He's the only one in the area that does it. And they have to call a dog. So, yeah. I mean, it kind of works both ways. I mean,
yep.
But yeah, we all want to be busy, you know, but as a hunter myself, am I going to wait 2 days? No, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to go ping, 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 ping right down the list.
Yeah.
Whoever can get out there sooner.
Yeah. So hopefully Michigan kind of gets that verbiage together because I think it'd be great to call you out to find a deer. Although it would be kind of, it's bittersweet, right? I don't ever want to call you, no. You know, as much as you might be a nice guy, but if I'm calling you, it means somewhere I've messed up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a little bit more reassurance that, you know, I'm going to have some confidence that if I've killed a deer, you're going to say, look, it's dead or it's alive and we'll be able to find it pretty quick instead of waiting on it and sleeping on it for a night or two.
If we fly over it, we'll find it.
Yeah. That's the confidence I like because when you call a dog, nothing, again, I feel bad. If someone has dogs, I do think they're a great resource. The technology here is, you know, I've never had a dog tracker go, yeah, we're going to find your deer. Like, they're all real cautious. Like, you know, like, we'll see what we can do. If the deer's dead, you know, we should be able to find it. But, you know, if you're not being fully truthful or you maybe hit it a little farther back, you know, things like, there's a lot of determining factors there. Whereas you're like, look, if you can get me in an area where I can fly over it, I'll tell you if it's dead or alive.
Yeah, I there's no guarantees in life, but if you say we can only fly over this 40-acre parcel, we can't go to the neighbor, so don't even look. If your deer is there, there's a very, very high chance we're going to find it, or 100 acres. I mean, if we can expand out from there, that just...
Thankfully, where I hunt, everyone around me would let me track, so you just zoom all over.
Yeah. And, you know, we...
In fact, they would actually probably be happier if I brought a drone guy out because they wouldn't want the dog running out there. But, yeah.
I mean, even if you do everything right and, like, with a hit, I mean, I've seen videos of people moneymaker shots and the deer doesn't go down. Their will to live is insane, so...
Yeah, I shot a nice buck this year, and it was almost straight underneath me. I put it right next to his spine and it just behind the shoulder, and it came out his armpit here, and it went 100 yards before there was any spot of blood, but it dropped right there. But there wasn't anything in that 100 yards, so if I hadn't been paying attention and listening to where it went, maybe someone that's a little bit more amped up or newer to hunting, if it hadn't been for experience to tell me, like, I know what I did, it's going to die, you probably wouldn't have found it, because it went up on this little ridge and then fell down into this creek bottom, wadded up in a deadfall.
My Kansas buck is probably the most – it's the wildest thing I've seen from a deer, because we were on the ground and I shot it here, like right in the chest, and when it came back around, it was like someone was dumping a bucket of blood out of this deer. And I watched it walk 400 or 500 yards across this open field, pouring blood like that the entire time.
That's incredible.
And then when Mike and I got to the edge of the field, we kind of lost it for a second, and then I happened to see it bed down. But I just remember being like, when it came back in and we seen how much blood it lost, I thought, oh, this is going to drop right there within a couple of seconds. But it still took that deer, I would say something close to like 10 minutes to finally expire. And I don't know, I to this day, I'll never understand how.
That's incredible. I just watched a video today on TikTok. Someone, you know, a front shot, and I was like, and the arrow wasn't even all the way in it yet, and blood was just,
oh yeah,
pumping out of there. I was like, man.
You know what would really be cool? I don't know if you plan on doing this. Like, when you get there, because I understand, like, there's a certain point where you black out when you shoot a deer. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I hit him right there. And then you get up to it, it's like, in the stomach, you're like, oh. But but I mean, it'd be cool to, like, hey, like, have like a deer silhouette and just be like, where'd you hit it? And then point it, and then, like, to, and like, you ever seen the dots where they go, like, the green dot recovered the deer, red dot they didn't, or something?
Yeah,
like
I'll
that.
Be keeping data. I'm still working on that, but just on what they said, right, what had actually happened, you know, were they, was it fatal or was it non-fatal? I'll be keeping different data. Just, I think, I don't know what I'm going to quite do with it yet, but I'm sure that eventually that there's a story to tell with the data.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe I'll sell it to a broadhead company or something. Maybe I'll sell it to your buddy's broadhead company.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, for sure.
And I say that because I would, you know, what kind of, you know, crossbow, bow,
right,
kind of broadhead, fixed, mechanical.
I'd like to see how, like, the data I would like to see is how many, the difference between crossbow and compounds. Right, because we've kind of given crossbow hunters a little bit of crap here because some just situations we've. It's a dog upstairs.
Oh, sorry.
Like some of the situations we've found ourselves in, like with hunting, you know, a lot of times when something negative happens, it's a guy with a crossbow. So I would just wonder, like, you know, do you, are crossbow hunters because they have a crossbow taking more unethical shots, or are we're just crazy, you know, egotistical compound hunters that just, you know, do what we want?
Well, and I blame it sometimes on the marketing of crossbow. Like, on the box it says groupings, like the Ravens, like groupings at 100
rifle,
yards,
like accuracy out to 100 yards.
Like,
yeah.
why say that? Why? Like, because then you're just saying, you know, like to the layman that it can go, I can go to 100 yards,
and they're doing it.
Yeah, yeah,
they're trying that shot.
Yeah, and it's not like I can't take that with a bow either, but I'm just saying, like, yeah, ethically, am I gonna do that? It'd be really tough on a whitetail. Less, I would have to be on ground level, can't be in a stand, and it would be.
You have to. There's a situation would have to be. I don't even still on a perfect situation.
Yeah,
yards, I don't know.
It's be, and like I know people do it with elk and stuff, but that's like a bigger animal and stuff, and that's like 80 yards. I don't know a lot of hundreds, but there's some rare people that are freaks, but I mean, there's a certain point where, like, why are you putting that on a box?
The other one I'd like would be the difference between mechanical and fixed.
See, that's where for me, that would be the most interesting to see. Yeah. I shoot mechanicals, but I think that I'm going to switch to a fixed blade.
I just switched to a fixed blade last year, and I don't know, I only shot one deer with my bow. And I kind of got lucky because I hit it low, but it only ran like 60, 70 yards. But for years, I had tons of success with you know, Rage broadheads. Then I went to the Muzzy Hybrid, and I had tons of success with there. I mean, the thing I loved the most about mechanicals is the blood trail. Like, I'll tell you, even with a fixed blade this year, blood trail was nothing like what I have from a mechanical. But, you know, I like that I can – the strength of the fixed blade.
So I put a Rage 2-blade into the shoulder of a real nice buck. At the time, it was the biggest buck I've ever had an opportunity, and I hit it right in the shoulder. After I sat and watched it on a doe for 45 minutes. So imagine that. It's 30 yards away. I'm looking behind the tree on one knee on my seat, one leg on the stand, just shaking for almost an hour. He finally comes across at like 25 yards, perfect broadside, everything you dream of, whack, right in the shoulder. And then I found the arrow about 200 yards away, the whole arrow. And I'm like, and that's the penetration piece when I don't get the perfect shot. So maybe I'm wrong for planning on not being
perfect,
but at the same point, if I do make a mistake, maybe that arrow gets that 3 inches where I can get a longer two.
Yeah, and that's kind of what made me decide, because I've done the same thing, you know. Hit a deer in the shoulder and then just went, man, like, it, the worst part is you know it immediately. There's not another sound like it, and then you see your arrow sticking out 18 inches, you know, or more, and you know it immediately, and then it's almost like, I have to go track this deer now, but knowing that things are not gonna nine times out of ten, at least with my experience with mechanicals, it's not going to end well. I haven't blasted a deer in the shoulder with a fixed blade. I don't really plan on, but if I do and it blows through, then that'll probably be what seals the deal for me.
But I did the deer I shot this year. It was a mechanical, and it zipped right through it like it was a piece of paper. I was like, oh.
Yeah. So
but that was finally got a nice shot, you know, the way it was supposed to be done. Zipped right through it. So.
I bet on both sides. So I think everything has a situation. And like I did the Iron Wills, and I like the Iron Wills, but then I did the Severs this year, and they perform phenomenally.
A bunch of deer this year with those.
I know. I just shot tons of them. And then I was like, well, this year I'm probably going to go fix, but I'm trying to, I don't know. I'm just a weird guy. I like trying out stuff, but I'm going to probably do a lot of trad stuff. I'm going to be that loser and be a trad guy. So
those two, I think, pieces of data would be the two that most intrigued by.
Yeah, it would be pretty interesting.
You'd probably piss some people off because then it'd be like, look at all these fixed blades.
It would be funny, too, to keep track of the initial phone call. Where did you hit it? And then where did you actually hit it? Okay.
Yeah, because I know a lot of friends that smoked their deer and we never found them. Which is a little odd.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to take away anything. You don't even have to answer this. If somebody said, like, they took, like, a neck shot or something like that, like, are you saying no to that call or, like?
I would take the call. Now, if he feels that it warrants me to come out and pay for my services, then I owe him. It's dead or alive or 6 miles away.
Okay.
I mean, do you think you would straight up tell him, like, you know, hey, listen, like, based on what you're telling me, I don't know that you're going to find that deer.
I would definitely frame the expectation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think there's a certain risk in any shot, even if they did smoke them or it was pouring out blood out of their chest. Yeah. I mean, there's no guarantee, you know, but it's...
Some are a little bit higher than others.
Right. Absolutely. But usually on those good shots, you're not going to phone call.
No. Yeah. Unless you just want the practice and you were like, hey, give me a call. You shoot one so I can come out.
But I've seen lots of, like you said, you're talking about 450 yards. You know that thing went right through the pump station.
Yeah. It severed the artery right there. Mm. And, I don't know. I wish I would have had that portion on video. All I have is the trail the next day, which is insane because it was still wet the next day, which just tells you how much blood came out. I remember when I turned around going like, whoa. And then for it to take as long as it did was just dumbfounding because, I mean, I've made worse shots on deer and watched them expire faster than that. And for him to just keep going. But – it, you know, rut it up, mature buck. Like, their will to just keep doing what they're doing is pretty high.
Yeah. Yeah. They're fascinating.
Yeah. So, no, man, you all right? Oh, you just looked at me like I did something.
You're talking.
You know, I'm excited to see kind of how your season goes. I'm excited. I hope Michigan, you know, you said you were working to try and get some of that verbiage changed. Hopefully that does. I think that if you get that kind of fixed in Michigan, you're going to blow up. You know, especially in this area. But I'm excited to see kind of how it goes for you down there in Ohio and in Indiana, and then if you decide to venture out to other states from there.
Yeah, I know there's some risk involved on my end, you know, starting a service that I can't do in my home state. And, you know, I've thought about that, but I think that there's an opportunity to help hunters in other states. I'm interested to see how it goes too.
I think... I do think the DNR will probably be a little cautious at first, but once they see what these other services are and how it's being used, I'm going to hold out hope that they'll come up with common sense rules, more clear language, and you'll be able to do it here. Because I'll tell you, I think if you get it here, it will blow up quick, especially because of the amount of the success rate that I think that you're going to have.
Yeah, and like we touched on it earlier, it's interesting when you look at the other states where it's legal and how the law is written, it's almost exactly the same. It's just their interpretation of it. So when you look at the language in Indiana, It was almost exactly the way it's written in Michigan, but they're defining words differently. You know, their definition of hunt, their definition of take. Well, in Indiana, that's not hunting. In Michigan, so far,
it is.
It's considered that. I mean, I think it's just new to them.
Yeah,
they have to get their hands around it. They've probably got more important things to worry about, but
working with the state representative, though, that's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, but
it is a politician. I get you.
Yeah, they've been nice, but I there's a lot of hounding that comes on my end.
Yeah. You're just a drop in a pan there.
Yeah. I guess that's a nice way to say it. It's like peeing in the ocean.
So let's talk about ways to contact you. I know we're in Michigan, but if there's anyone that is in Indiana, Ohio, that listens or is traveling out there or anything like that, what's the best way to contact you? And
so luckily all of my domains are the same. It's all Drop Time Drones. So whether it's Facebook, Instagram, my website,
soon to be TikTok,
they're all active. They're all live. They can always call me too, but they're all the same. So, the website is live. It is in our testing phase right now. We're supposed to finalize that next week. So we can take payments. You can enter your type of service you want. We tested it today. Everything's links to my email. So when you request service in there, there's just a little small, your name, email, phone number, and the service request that you want. Then it sends me, it pings me on my email. So we tested that. That's working. Or you can call me at 810-730-0297. Just talk about, you know, what your plans are for the next hunting season, you know, anything I can do to help prepare that, you know.
Yeah, because, again, guys, he offers – in Michigan, he offers pet recoveries and then the I don't want to say land survey. I don't know the best way to – because it's not –
I call it a wildlife survey because I don't want it to be pigeonholed to, like, deer. I mean, yeah. I like deer too, but I think it's super cool to go out and look at coyotes, man.
Yeah, but, you know, so if you're interested in those services, hopefully not the pet – recovery service. I think that one, as much as I think that you could use the business, I don't like the idea of people losing pets. But the wildlife survey, you know, if you're looking for ways to better manage your land, better access the way, you know, properties or look for places to put food plots in, I think that the drone service there would be super helpful. So, you know.
Yeah, the way the guy that, like I was telling you before, the way he used the information and the notes he was taking, and I was impressed. Like that's the right way to use that data and information.
Right. And everybody's victim of, oh, I don't have enough time to go scout my land and all that. Well,
scout.
Yeah. Look at this. Couple hours, you can get more information. Bam, there. It's all on your fingertips and all that. And like, okay, you only got one weekend a month, and you utilize this, and you probably get more information in this one day than you could do going out there 10 times.
And you can refer back to it.
Right.
Yep. You know.
Yeah. And historical data and all that. So.
Yeah.
So.
Is there anything you want to bring up? I mean.
No, I think it's exciting for me. It's exciting for the hunting industry. I appreciate you guys having me out. I mean, it's been fun.
I'm excited to talk to you after deer season.
Yeah.
Next year to see kind of how it went, how many recoveries you had and the data that you're able to collect. I think that'd be cool. And then, yeah, if I ever buy land, I'd probably call you just to look at it. Just like, hey, because I didn't think of
or before you buy land.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, before. Yeah,
before.
Yeah.
Before you buy land. And then you know. And that's such a thing. You're like, if you have, I'm going to buy $170,000. Not real. I'm just saying hypothetically because I can't afford that. But I'm just saying, if you're going to buy $170,000, could I do boots on the ground? I'm only going to learn so much about us. You call me. Save me time and just like, okay, look at all this. I got all this information. Or you just go, wow, man, there's nothing here. Like, bam.
So, yeah, and you look at that example I did when I found like over 100 deer in that one field. And if you're looking at just that piece of property right there, like, oh, there's nothing here.
Yeah.
Then you just right over the tree row. It was.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah, it's not just deer recovery services that you're offering, but in Michigan, unfortunately, right now, but hopefully that changes. Hopefully it changes my deer season.
Maybe hopefully people listen to this podcast and hear that it's not legal and maybe, you know, in numbers, we can tell people, like, why is this not legal? Like, what, like, we, you know, hopefully somebody will be able to take charge, or we can just get it on a ballot or something, or just people call their local CEO and be like, hey, I heard this ruling. I don't agree with it, or just, you know, let them know or something.
Working on getting on a ballot right now is what we're pushing to do.
Yeah. And more people that know, because, like, I didn't know until you told me, because I thought it was. I was
clearly,
like,
I didn't know, because I actually took one up this year to look for it.
Well, you're just incriminating yourself. You're going to jail, boy.
I'm not too overly concerned about it.
Because a lot of people don't know. They just, if you see it on TikTok, you just assume it's legal everywhere, because you don't know they're in Ohio.
It's a lot like reaping turkeys, right? Like, you know, people in Michigan, like, they don't realize that that's not legal. It looks really cool on TikTok and other states where it is legal, but in Michigan, heck, when I first seen it, it was something I wasn't really interested in, but I thought it was totally legal until someone told me it wasn't.
Yeah, so I think this is, you know, this the first stepping stone that we need to take to start, like, getting the stuff to go, because, I mean, I don't see the difference in the dog, and I think it's better than the dog. I said that. That's my words, but
I mean, I agree with you. Without ever having done it, I still think that I like the dogs. I mean, it's cool. I'm a big dog lover, so bring them out to pet love, and they find my deer is great. But I think the drone is going to be a much higher success rate.
Like, and if I happen to need a service, and Tim's busy, or I'm in Michigan, and I can't use Tim, and I'll definitely call a dog. It's not like I'm going to be like, oh, well, I said drones are better. I can't I can't be a hypocrite, you know.
Hey, I own a drone, and I may have to use a dog.
So I think that's it. I mean.
Yeah, for now, until, unfortunately, we have a long wait until we get to see all your statistical data. And I think, what, Ohio doesn't end until, like, February.
Yeah.
We're probably going to catch you before that.
Oh, yeah,
like, when
sure.
Michigan ends, just because we live on Michigan time.
Right. Yeah. Time's the same everywhere, right? Well, our time.
Our time. So, no, we appreciate you coming on and explaining that, because, like I said, we've never – not something we really know a ton about, and just something that interests both of us. So I'm glad you took the time to come and talk about it.
Yeah, it's I appreciate it. It's a great opportunity. And, you know, unfortunately, it's our off season, and so now I have – 6 months to sit here and think about it.
Yeah.
So, no, good stuff. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.